I'm Reverend Lisa Day, minister of the Unitarian Universalist Church of Savannah. Welcome to our weekly radio program, where you'll hear a segment from one of our recent services recorded at our church on beautiful Troop Square. We invite you to join us Sundays at 11 a.m. in person or via live stream on Zoom. You can find the Zoom link and more about Unitarian Universalism in Savannah at our website, uusavannah.org. We hope you enjoy today's program.
Good morning.
Greetings
to this generous, gregarious, and gorgeous gang. Welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Church of Savannah. I'm Jessica Levitt-Watara, and I'll be serving as worship associate today, supporting our minister, Reverend Lisa Day. Here at the UU Church of Savannah, we are working to build a diverse, multicultural, and beloved community. We celebrate the presence and participation of people of all races, genders, sexual orientations, abilities, and ethnic and national origins. We warmly welcome you on YouTube or on site, whoever you know yourself to be, and wherever you are on your journey. We have a tradition in our congregation that if you're visiting with us, we like to be made aware and greet you. If you would like to introduce yourself, if you would please raise your hand or rise as you're willing and able, Martha, our usher, will bring you a microphone, and we do like to use a microphone so that everyone in the congregation and on YouTube can hear. Do we have any visitors who are feeling brave on this side? Yes, we do.
My name is Jeremiah. My wife and I just moved here to Savannah pretty recently, and I'm excited to be here.
Welcome.
My name is Rob Zucker. This is my wife, Teresa. We just recently moved here from Savannah, here to Savannah from Massachusetts, and we're really happy to be here.
Welcome.
Hello, my name is Josiah. I've lived in Savannah for about 17 years now, but it's my first time in the building, and just wanted to come, observe, and see how everyone worships.
Welcome. And do we have any visitors who are feeling brave on this side that would like to introduce themselves?
Good morning. My wife, Rachel, and I'm Jay. We're visiting from Portland, Maine. We're spending part of the year in Savannah. We love it here and glad to be part of this community. We are Jewish, and we feel very at home in a UU space. So nice to be part of your community this morning.
Welcome.
Good morning. Long-time listener, first-time caller. My name's Candler. This is Abby. We've been watching on YouTube for a little bit, wanted to come in person and see how everything goes.
Welcome.
Okay. Oh, thank you.
See, this is why you guys get to be called gregarious and gorgeous. We're happy to have you. And if you're looking for a new faith community, we encourage you to visit several times, get a feel for our worship style and our approach to matters of faith and religion. And now, with the lighting of our chalice, the symbol of our Unitarian Universalist faith, we enter into sacred time. Our chalice lighter this morning is Lydia Ringman. In the Unitarian Universalist tradition, our chalice is symbolic of the light of reason, the warmth of community, and the flame of hope. Today, our chalice lighting words come from Sarah Lammer. The element of fire represents passion, veracity, authenticity, and vitality. If the chalice is the supporting structure of Unitarian Universalism, then we are the flame. We are the flame fanned strong by our passion for freedom, our yearning for truth-telling, are daring to be authentic with one another, and the vitality we sustain in our meeting together. In all of this, there is love.
You are here. Now enter in. Enter with body and with heart and mind. Send the bits of the world you carried in on your clothes and on your heart back out through the doors. Let them wait for you there. Breathe in peace. Know the blessing of solitude sweetened by the presence of companions. Claim wholeness in this hour. In the very act of entering this place at this hour, you declare yourself welcome. And the spirit whispers, at last, you have arrived where you have been long awaited. Let us worship together. Our story this morning is called Giraffes Can't Dance. Do you know this one? All right, well, it's a good one. Don't give away the ending. Gerald was a tall giraffe whose neck was long and slim, but his knees were awfully crooked and his legs were rather thin. He was very good at standing still and munching shoots off trees, but when he tried to run around, he buckled at the knees. Now, every year in Africa, they hold a jungle dance where every single animal turns up to skip and prance. And this year, when the day arrived, poor Gerald felt so sad, because when it came to dancing, he was really very bad. The warthogs started waltzing, and the rhinos rock and rolled. The lions danced a tango that was elegant and bold. The chimps all did a cha-cha with a very Latin feel, and eight baboons then teamed up for a splendid Scottish reel. Gerald swallowed bravely as he walked toward the floor, but the lion saw him coming and soon began to roar. Hey, look at clumsy Gerald, the animals all sneered. Giraffes can't dance, you silly fool. Oh, Gerald, you're so weird. Gerald simply froze up. He was rooted to the spot. They're right, he thought. I'm useless. Oh, I feel like such a clot. So he crept off from the dance floor and he started walking home. He'd never felt so sad before, so sad and so alone. Then he found a little clearing and he looked up at the sky. The moon can be so beautiful, he whispered with a sigh. Excuse me, coughed a cricket who'd seen Gerald earlier on, but sometimes when you're different, you just need a different song. Listen to the swaying grass and listen to the trees. To me, the sweetest music is those branches in the breeze. So imagine that the lovely moon is playing just for you. Everything makes music if you really want it to. With that, the cricket smiled and picked up his violin. Then Gerald felt his body do the most amazing thing. His hooves had started shuffling, making circles on the ground. His neck was gently swaying, and his tail was swishing round. He threw his arms out sideways, and he swung them everywhere. Then he did a backward somersault and leapt up in the air. Gerald felt so wonderful, his mouth was open wide. I am dancing. Yes, I'm dancing. I am dancing, Gerald cried. Then, one by one, the animals who'd been there at the dance arrived while Gerald boogied on and watched him quite entranced. They shouted, "It's a miracle. We must be in a dream. Gerald's the best dancer that we've ever, ever seen." How did you learn to dance like that? Please, Gerald, tell us how. But Gerald simply twirled around and finished with a bow. Then he raised his head and looked up at the moon and stars above. We all can dance, he said, when we find music that we love.
As many of you know, I've created a theme for this year, which is Love at the Center, and Reverend Lisa has brought this into our worship service. So today I wanted to share an excerpt from Victoria Safford's book, Love at the Center. I realized that for me, this is the heart of it, this implicit, inherent belovedness. Behind the silky scrim of woven words each week lay this hope, this intention, this aching aspiration that whether they, quote, believed in God, end quote, or not, and whether or not I did, the people would know themselves beloved, which is to say, worthy, with a place, as the poet says, in the family of things. A place no more and no less exalted than anyone's place, or the place of the grasses, the trees, the birds, and the air, and the fish of the sea. A holy, holy, undisputed, rightful place on this, our common ground. To know themselves, beloved, without question, is the place where we begin. And from there, by our actions, by our choices, by our art, by our risks, by our work and tears and prayers and mutual support, by our solidarity and singing lullabies to children and chanting in the streets, by our tenderness, and when it is required, rage, by our love, in other words, to remind each other. This is our calling in the world. I care a great deal about the precision of language and theological speech in particular. I know the lethal and life-giving potency of words and the ease with which sloppily chosen words may be weaponized or misunderstood. And yet, I don't want precision or theology or semantics to get in the way of this conviction. This hunch, this simple, somewhat radical claim about love. As music and dancing, paintings, poems, and prayers insist, metaphor speaks with sometimes more fluency, more light, more prophetic possibility, and more pastoral tenderness than the deadening thud of literal prosaic explanations. I've not been a minister long enough. I've not been a person long enough to know much about God at all. But I believe we are called to move through our days as if we are beloved of God, as if we all belong, we, ourselves, and everyone else, and every living thing. When I say you are beloved of God, I mean you are beloved, of course. You just are. Now and here, in this unlikely, perhaps unreplicated, gorgeous world, this shimmering, sorrowing world, we exist together. No scientist, nor sorcerer, nor sacred text can ever fully tell us why or how it's happened, this existence. Whether we ask our whole lives long in the idiom of astrophysics or a child's bedazzled wonder, we are here now, and we all belong. Beloved. And therefore, my work, however imperfect at the end of each day, my work and my joy is to strive to act accordingly, as if in your presence, whoever you are, wherever on this earth you are, I were in the presence of the holy, I have no other words to describe it. This love that guides us, calls us, heals us, and holds us in its hands. We have several things to share this morning. First of all, Diana Churchill, she fell and broke her ankle, so we'll keep her in our thoughts. I also heard from Raven earlier in this week that her brother Holmes has passed away. He had Alzheimer's for 15 years, and so she said she is sad, but also relieved that he's free from his body. And I have a joy that we closed on our house on Friday, and we're... Thank you. And now we will finish packing, which we need all the prayers possible for that. Let us hold all of our joys and sorrows, spoken and unspoken, in our hearts as we join together in the responsive reading found in your order of service. Sorrow is everywhere.
And joy is too warm.
As we mourn together,
so we celebrate together,
and offer thanks
that we are not alone.
So may it be. Now and in all the days to come.
Let us enter into a spirit of meditation. The words of meditation this morning from Unitarian Universalist minister Gretchen Haley. For this one moment, know only that you are loved, that you are safe and whole and loved. Know that you belong here, here among us, here upon this earth. In your body, however tired or broken your heart may be, whatever fear, disappointment, anger you carry, for this hour know you are not alone. Feel the presence of others surrounding you, breathing beside you and with you. Discovering together the way our voices rise and fall together. In harmony, in hope, claim here a resilient freedom, the choice for love, for light, to live with joy and gratitude and praise as a form of resistance. Amen. We cut the readings from this morning's order of service so that we have time for our Healthy Congregations team to launch their work to the entire congregation. And so I am especially grateful for the spirit that moved Jessica to choose the perfect words that will, in fact, support my homily as if I had chosen them as a reading. I worked in a large suburban library all through high school and a university library all through college and a very, very small town library for a couple years just before moving to Savannah. In all three places, I heard the same comment over and over again. It must be great to work somewhere so quiet and calm. But libraries host community meetings. Draw together people of all ages eagerly searching for books, DVDs, and audiobooks, and enthusiastically researching every imaginable topic. Host story times of wiggly, giggly toddlers and curious preschoolers, and study groups of college students and adult literacy classes. Provide internet access for unhoused folks and folks who lack access at home. Serve as free lunch sites for kids when school isn't in session. Run school reading, summer reading programs. Function as polling places. Libraries are neither calm nor especially quiet. Over 30 years of congregational ministry, I've heard plenty of similar misunderstandings about churches. It must be great to work with people who are all good and kind. It must be great to work someplace free of political intrigue. It must be great to work with folks who always have the best interests of one another and the institution at heart. It is great to work with church members and friends here and in all the congregations I have served. I love this work and I love the people I serve. But none of you is always good and kind. There is at least as much political intrigue in congregations as in any other institution, and it is more acrimonious because the stakes are so high. And it is never the case that church members always have the best interests of one another and the whole congregation at heart. You've probably seen some congregations sum up this reality in a pithy statement on roadside signs. This church isn't a museum for saints, it's a hospital for sinners. Saints and sinners don't fit comfortably with Unitarian Universalist theology. If we're going to be pithy, we might turn instead to the tired witticism that says our Unitarian forebears believed they were too good to be damned, and our Universalist forebears believed God was too good to damn them. It's an imperfect distinction between the two historical strands of our merged tradition, and the God language probably offends some of you, and the damnation language probably offends or at least confuses others of you. And all those objections notwithstanding, I don't reject that characterization of who we were and still are out of hand. Here at the end of the first quarter of the 21st century, Unitarian Universalism exists in a tension between believing that we are good enough just as we were born and are every day of our lives, that is to say, we are too good to be damned, and knowing that we are each flawed, that is to say, thank goodness God is too good to damn us. Our salvation might lie in that very tension, in the degree to which we as individual Unitarian Universalists and as gathered groups of UUs come to know in our bones that being flawed is not the opposite of being good enough. I pulled this morning's story, Giraffes Can't Dance, from the largest section of my picture book collection, the section I call Best True Self. I am convinced that one of the primary tasks of Unitarian Universalist congregations is to ensure that every child, youth, and adult in the congregation knows that the rest of us see, recognize, and celebrate them as their best true self, especially when they can't see it or believe it themselves, and even when their words and actions fall short of kindness, generosity, compassion, care for others, and care for our RE community, our small groups, our entire congregation. I take this task seriously, not because I think the church is a substitute for therapy or support groups, and certainly not as a misguided attempt to turn the church into a flat collection of perfect, good, kind, ever-cooperative people we will never be. Rather, knowing ourselves and our companions in the church as already and always good enough, and recognizing that our words and actions often fall short of what we'd like our best true selves to be, This is imperative because we live in a wondrous and very, very troubled world. To survive and thrive in that world, to take up our part in repairing that world, we need to not be tangled in knots of inadequacy and shame. When we know in our bones that being flawed is not the opposite of being good enough, we're released and emboldened to act creatively, joyfully, fiercely, and steadfastly, strengthening the church as a place of belonging, serving our neighbors, sowing seeds of justice, and helping transform the world as it is into the world as it could be. Fulfilling the basic congregational task of ensuring that every child, youth, and adult knows that we see, recognize, and celebrate them as their best true self requires at least three interconnected elements of church life. First, the repetition and reinforcement of the message in worship and religious education that being flawed is not the opposite of being good enough. We already are, and we already and always recognize you as your best true self. Second, the development of and commitment to a congregational covenant that we then integrate into our worship services and keep at the center of our decision making and our program planning. We started that process a few weeks ago and will complete it by the time of our annual meeting in the spring. And finally, developing and utilizing a mechanism for calling our words and our actions back into alignment with our best true selves. That process began behind the scenes a year and a half ago when our Board of Trustees appointed our Healthy Congregations team. I won't go into any detail because the team will do that themselves in just a moment. Instead, I'll close with a brief story that illustrates my hope for this initiative. I once knew a director of a small daycare center who forbade her employees from ever forcing one child to apologize to another child, ever. They might not be sorry, she said, and we don't want to compel them to tell a lie. Instead, the daycare workers were encouraged to help the offending child find a way to make the injured child feel better. Return the snatched toy, share a snack, give a hug, play a game together, for example. That's an example of restorative justice. Recognition that a relationship has been harmed and third-party facilitation of efforts to repair the harm in a way that is meaningful and acceptable to both involved parties. No shaming, no punishment, and no mandatory participation either, which is a slight deviation, perhaps, from the childcare example. We want this congregation, the Unitarian Universalist Church of Savannah, to be a place of deep and salvific belonging, a place and a community that are balm to parched spirits and chafed souls. With robust and prayerful engagement in restorative justice processes and practices developed and guided by our HCT, with the adoption of a new covenant, and with continuing creative reaffirmation that we exist in a space where our too good to be damned being is held by an all-embracing love that is too good to damn us for our falling short of the wholeness of our best true selves, with these three practices, we will guarantee that this place and community are a balm and a salve for now and for years to come. Not perfect, not without flaws, but again, being flawed is not the opposite of being good enough. What a blessing it is to rest in that knowledge, Amen.
Good morning. My name is Jane Hoffman, and I'm up here this morning to introduce a new UUCS ministry dealing with conflict resolution through restorative justice. We have named this ministry the Healthy Congregations Team, or HCT for short. Our objectives in the next 15 to 20 minutes are fourfold: to introduce each member of the team to the congregation, to explain the HCT and its function, highlight our conflict resolution framework, and invite you to engage with us. We are here to help. Our group journey started 18 months ago when four UUCS members were asked by the board to serve on a new team dealing with conflict resolution. I agreed to participate for two reasons. In a time of extreme polarity and conflict in our country, the idea of contributing in some small way to greater comity in our own backyard was very appealing to me. And I was particularly excited to embark on a new mission with the other three team participants, whom you will hear from shortly. Throughout the last 18 months, we engaged periodically with Reverend Lisa and the board to update them on our progress. We each participated online in online UUA, UU Association training sessions, as well as interacting live with UUA staff who were well-versed in conflict resolution. And finally, we hosted a half-day training session for the board where we elicited their feedback as we prepared to roll out the HCT pathway to the congregation.
Good morning. My name is Jacqueline Smallwood, and I'm going to be discussing the social discipline window on the slide presentation with the thought to keep in the back of our minds, what kind of culture are we building here within our congregation? There are four quadrants, and I'm going to call them models. The neglectful model results when there is low support and low accountability. When the community doesn't have a shared sense of appropriate behavior, members may have individual understanding of what constitutes good manners or what behaviors are acceptable. People feel free to behave however they want and can cause harm. No one in the community is empowered to provide direction, support, or accountability for the situation. The people who experience or observe the harm see the community neglecting the thriving and safety of some of its members. Some will see harmful behaviors as the norm and will feel free to engage in them. Others will feel anxious or fearful and may leave the congregation. The permissive model results when there is high support and low accountability. When a community articulates its ideals about how each person has inherent worth and dignity and may have a covenant but doesn't actually address situations where covenant is broken or harm happens, the community is giving implicit permission for the problematic behaviors to continue. Often when someone with more power and or privilege acts harmfully to someone with less power and or privilege, leaders downplay the harm, claiming good intentions, suggesting that the harmed person is overreacting or excusing the harmful behavior as a quirky, unchangeable personality trait. Even though the community talks about ideal behaviors, the people with less power and or privilege feel that they don't matter, don't really belong in any meaningful way, and will eventually drift away. The punitive model results when there is low support and high accountability. When a community doesn't treat its members as having inherent worth and dignity in practice, it looks to use punishment as the only way to modify behavior. It doesn't focus on the impact of the situation on the one harmed. It doesn't focus on the well-being of the one who caused harm either, just with applying harsh consequences. Because this is the dominant model in the U.S. criminal justice system, it is often the expectation in our congregations, even though it runs counter to UU core values. Those who have experienced harm or feel that they have might move quickly to demanding this sort of punitive response as a way for the community to demonstrate its support of the ones harmed. The restorative model, the one that we're advocating for, results when there is high support and high accountability. When a community understands that humans are complex creatures with capacity for both care and harm, it finds a way to encourage the safety and thriving of all of its members. It sets clear expectations of appropriate boundaries and behaviors, encourages the practice of deep listening and compassionate communication, and offers to restore community and repair relationships when the harm has occurred. Everyone gets a chance to tell their story, to learn from their mistakes, and to have a voice in finding a way forward. Once a way forward is agreed to, the community continues to support both the one who has experienced harm and the one who has caused harm as they do the work of restoring healthy relationships. So you may be asking, what is the HCT's role in our congregational life? We are a listening ear. We are a caring resource. We are a way to positively work through conflict and disagreement in a safe and non-judgmental space. We are here to foster an ongoing conversation with the congregation about restorative justice and restorative practices. But there's also things that we are not. We are not here to decide who's right, who's wrong. We are not a tribunal or a decision-making body. We are not a requirement for anyone experiencing conflict, and we are not operating in a professional capacity. While I am a licensed clinical psychotherapist, I will not be providing such service in my role as an HCT team member. Thank you very much for your time and your attention.
Good morning. My name is Dan Flaherty, and I am privileged, and it's a real joy and an honor to work with these three women as part of our HCT. So the next piece is, how do we engage? What process are we going to follow when conflict occurs and someone chooses to utilize our ministry? So really, it's a very simple three-step pathway that we are going to follow. The initial step really is about one of our team members working with someone that is experiencing conflict or that's been hurt in our congregation. And we do that by really deeply listening to them and understanding what happened and how it is making them feel, and helping them to examine their thoughts and feelings. And often what we've learned through our training is that that can be enough to bring that person back into alignment and have them feel a sense of restoration. If more support is needed, then we will prepare the person to have a constructive and positive conversation with the other party that's involved in the conflict. And if needed, the Healthy Congregations team can help facilitate that conversation so that we can, again, bring about that restorative culture that Jacqueline was talking about earlier. And then finally, we can involve the board and the minister if we need additional support. So really, that's the pathway that we're going to follow as we get requests and situations that that are brought to us.
I've been a part of this church for 35 years. I came as managing editor of the Savannah Morning News, and I knew it was going to be a tough job. I was going to have to listen to a lot of people. And I immediately came to the Unitarian Church because I knew that was a place where my tribe would live, where I could talk to people, understand what was going on, and maybe just shout if I needed to shout. People came into my office because they wanted two things. They wanted to get their name in the paper, or they wanted to keep their name out of the paper. But when Jane Rago called and said, will you do this? Will you be a part of this team? I thought, okay, I'm used to listening and answering questions. And that's essentially what our job is, doing this. So we need to ask, tell me what happened. And we need to listen to that carefully. No jumping to assumptions, not being defensive, but listening. How do you feel about what happened? The UUA has a ton of tools about this. We've spent the last year and a half going through graphs and listening to videos and just have a myriad of things, and we want to make it all accessible to any of you who are interested in doing it. This is not a secret operation. This is the more people who know and understand and are willing to listen to each other, the better. There's a thing called an emotion wheel, and we were going to put it up there, but it's so big that it was hard to really look at it. But when we get angry, what does that mean? Are we let down? Are we humiliated, embarrassed, bitter, mad? Then we can go even deeper. Are we resentful, disrespected, furious? There's a happy part of this thing too. When we're accepted, when we're respected, and when we're confident. The next part is, how do you feel about what happened now? You know, the four of us have spent a lot of time together over the last, and we were not above getting miffed at each other. Not that we didn't trust each other. I mean, I can't imagine working with three more loving people. But maybe we didn't quite listen really well one time, or something happened. Some of us were aware, some of us weren't. And sometimes it's just easier to blame somebody else than to take responsibility and say, I screwed up. I messed up. I need to think through again how to do that better. The next question is, who was impacted and how? We were talking about kids and their stories. I just came back from being with grandkids, 11 and 13. They were fighting about something. I don't even remember what. But it was getting louder and louder. And finally, my daughter, Vanessa, says, enough. And the young one says, but if we stop bickering, then we have to do something about it. It was easier for him to keep the bickering going while he finished his little thing that he was doing, because then we'd have to do something about it. And what do you think you might need now? It's fine to think it through. Are you okay? Do you still need another step? What exactly would make you feel better, make you feel valued?
So we thought it would be interesting to share with you one of the videos that we went through extensively in our training. There will not be a quiz at the end, I promise, and we're not going to spend a lot of time in deep discussion just because we're approaching the end of the service, but we're certainly here for you and are happy to discuss this individually with you if you have any questions. But we thought this really set up a scenario that may feel familiar to some of you. I watched this and felt like, were there cameras in the room when I was president and we were doing the budget? Because it felt eerily, you know, familiar. And apparently lots of churches go through these kinds of things because the UUA made a whole video about it. So it's just a quick 4-minute video. I think it shows how all of us are you know, lovely, well-meaning, well-intentioned human beings, right, that are trying to do our very best, and yet we still enter into periods of conflict. So, so a great example.
Once upon a time, there was a congregation full of a lot of well-meaning but very human people. One year, they had experienced a lot of changes. The congregation experienced an increase in adult membership, but they also experienced a change in demographics. Their new family ministry initiative brought in several new families with children and youth of all ages. Sadly, during the same time, a few longtime affluent members moved out of the area and a few more died. Gene and Evan ran an energetic annual pledge drive. They were able to get 95% participation among members and active friends, including all of the new families. But the total amount pledged was $15,000 less compared to the previous year. In their report to the board, Gene and Evan noted that they had lost more than half of the donors from the upper quartile of giving from the previous year. At the next finance committee meeting, Pat, the finance chair, began.
Here is the draft budget we created last month based on last year's income. The pledge line will need to be reduced by $15,000 now that we have the actual pledge numbers.
Tracy, another longtime member of the finance committee, pointed to the line item for the director of family ministry and said,
"We can easily balance the budget if we just cut this position by 50%. We funded it in the first place because it was supposed to grow the church, but look at these numbers. We're going backward."
Terry, who was new to the finance committee, said,
"The membership committee has said that our membership numbers are up overall. I think we can trust our observations and acknowledge that the growth has come from all of the families who have been coming, especially in the past year. It takes time for newer members and young families to pledge at the levels of our elder generation. I know that was true for me and my family, especially when we became empty nesters."
Jordan, another longtime member, chimed in.
"We've had similar budget shortfalls in the past. We also will have some money rolling over from the current year's budget. So, if we include that, it's only a $5,000 shortfall. Our cash donation line item is a little conservative, and we have a new fundraiser planned for the upcoming year. Let's make those adjustments and send it to the board for approval."
The finance committee went back and forth for a good 2 hours. Finally, Pat said,
"We really need to get this budget to the board this week, so I am stopping discussion. Let's vote."
The vote to accept the budget with the adjusted income line items barely passed, 3-2, with Tracy and Danny voting against. After the meeting, Tracy and Danny met in the parking lot and grumbled about the vote.
"This is financial mismanagement,"
cried Tracy. "We need to let people know about this," cried Danny. Later that night, Tracy called Carrie, who'd been the congregational president and finance chair a couple of decades back.
"The current finance committee is living in a dream world. They think money grows on trees."
The next day, Carrie met with several other retirees at their weekly breakfast and told the others,
"It looks like our congregation is becoming a sinking ship. Would you sign this petition to the board and have them reject this outlandish budget? We can threaten to withhold our pledges if they don't cut back on some staff hours to balance the budget."
Danny went home and told their spouse, Alex, about what happened. Alex had been a volunteer director of religious education when their children were young back in the late 1970s. When she met with her woman spirit group a few days later, she said,
"All of our money is going to this newfangled director of I don't know what. What is even the job? All I know is that they are spending too much time in the Sunday service and not enough time in class where they belong."
Shannon replied,
"That's been bothering me too. Let's write a letter to the Sunday school committee so they get the kids back in classes so we can enjoy the service again."
What is going on here?
Monday.com. The opposite of any work platform we tried in the past.
So I think, you know, many of you may be able to identify with all or part of that video scenario. And again, who's the good guy and the bad guy, or the good person and the bad person in the video? It's really everyone and no one, right? Because we're all trying to do the right thing and have different things that are driving and motivating us to the decisions that we're making, right? But there's a right way and a better way to approach conflict. And so that's really what we're here to help work through.
It's exciting to me that the UUA has spent a lot of time putting information together so that we're not individual congregations wandering around how to handle conflict. The number of resources are truly amazing. We're building a website. It's slowly coming. When we get our staff all together next week, we're just going to be adding and adding and adding. And so if you keep going back to the website, you'll see more things coming along. And you're perfectly welcome. Go to the UUA website and watch videos, look at the different graphs. I mean, we went through an organized curriculum that was 9 sections, and in the 9 sections, there were 6 to 10 parts of it. So you don't have to go that deep to get the idea of what's going on, but if you're interested in it, we would love to have many of you go. If you have a specific request, the website, or you can email us at hct@uusavannah.org. hct@uusavannah.org. We will be monitoring it. If you know of things you want to talk about, our particular issues, we'll watch and someone will get back to you. We're essentially here to help us manage conflict through restorative justice. Restorative means coming back to our covenant. You're going to hear lots about our covenant, what we promise to each other, how we promise to be with each other. And that's our goal. And since we have love at the center, we have a place to come back to. You're valued, and you're worth listening to, and we want to do that. Thank you.
I speak for Jessica and the board and myself when I say we are grateful these four people accepted the invitation and that they have stuck with it this long, and we are excited about the prospects going forward. As we leave this sacred hour, may the welcome we received become the welcome we extend. Let us meet the world with open hearts, open hands, and the audacity to build spaces where every soul feels at home. Amen.
This is Reverend Lisa Day. I hope you've enjoyed this program from the Unitarian Universalist Church of Savannah. Please join us at one of our services sometime soon at our church on Troop Square or live on Zoom. We're the beacon of liberal religion in Savannah, and you can find out more at uusavannah.org. We meet on Sundays at 11 a.m. Thanks for listening.